Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 53. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at david@linuxcrazy.com or catch me at IRC on Freenode. That's channel hash, or some people say pound, Linux Crazy. I'm currently on vacation for 2 weeks, and I'm going to visit my brother just north of Atlanta in a couple days, so I wanted to get a podcast together so that everyone didn't think that I quit. I really enjoy this vacation. It's really nice not having to go to work. I hear people say they don't know what they would do if they retired because they wouldn't know what they would do with all their time. I wouldn't have any trouble at all finding stuff to do with my time if I was independently wealthy and didn't have to work. So that's not going to happen anytime soon, so I'll just enjoy my two-week vacation and then put a smile on my face and go back to work. Especially the times now, if somebody asks you to do something at work, you don't grumble and complain. You say, yep, that's me, I'll do it. So what I've been working on is I've been continuing to work on Gentoo report that I've talked about in some other podcasts. Basically, to recap what that is, it's a Python program that generates a report of a Gentoo system. I use Gentoo, so that's what I use it for, but it could be done with any distro, Ubuntu, Debian, Red Hat, Slackware, doesn't matter. So what it does is it creates a bunch of different files for each one of your configuration files or your some system information. Like, it's got your kernel version, it's got what ALSA driver you're using, your particular options for ALSA, it's got your CPU information. It's got a, you know, you can make it have just about anything you want in it. It has about 10 or 15 different files of a bunch of different information. So we have the report. So now what do we do with the report? So the next step is that I'm creating a program that will upload specific information to a Drupal website. And this is pretty cool. What it will do is it logs into the Drupal site, and it go ahead and go to a whatever page you want to create, and it will insert different information into a form on the Drupal site. So it's pretty neat. So the idea behind it is, what we'll do is we'll generate the report, we'll pull certain information out of the report. Once we pull the information we want out of the report, we can upload it to the Drupal site and put the information on a page so that users can see what kernel you're running, see what ALSA drivers you're using, see what video card you're using. So different users could then search the site and find other people with similar hardware. And once they find people with similar hardware, they could ask them how they're getting something to work. So it's going to be pretty interesting. Now, this particular program, what it's using is, it's using PyCurl, which is the Python for curl. It's using subprocess and a bunch of other different modules for Python. The hard part about this is that you have to find out the information from the form that you're actually going to submit this information to, and there's no mistakes. I mean, everything has to be just right. And in this particular form that we're using our test with, it has about let's see here, you have the title, you have a drop down field number one, you have drop down field number two, drop down field number three, drop down field number four. And then you have to put in the form build ID, and you have to put in the form token. Now, this form token is pretty interesting. This is a security measure. Actually, to prevent people from doing exactly what I'm doing. The token is for each particular machine, or I think it's generated for each particular browser. Because I've noticed if I use this PyCurl script, it uses one token, and then Firefox is actually using another token. So actually what I do is I go ahead and log into the site. Then what I'll do is where you enter this page at, you can't just go there. If you're not logged in, you can't go to the page to enter the information. So you have to log into the site. Then what I do is I go to the page that we're going to put the information into, grab that token. Then I save that token, and then I go back to that page, same page, with the token already. So I have the token. And then once I have the token, then we put all this information in, and then we go ahead and save, and the form is mysteriously filled out and entered on the website. And this happens all behind the scenes. There's no clicking with the mouse or anything like that. So what the idea is that this program will generate the information. It will pull out what information you want to put on this little form. And then it will go ahead and automatically, mysteriously, create a page on the Drupal community site that you have. And then everybody can check out your hardware, or you can check out other people's hardware. You can talk to people from your area, or talk to people that have similar hardware. Just a pretty neat way of getting to know people that use the same distro that you use and the same hardware that you use, and the maybe that are close by that you didn't even know that they were close by. So there's two things we still need to do for this is, we already have the community site set up. We already have the program to generate the report. And I basically have got it figured out how to submit the information. So the next phase of this project is to use grep or sed or awk or rejects or something to pull out specific information from the report and create a new report with just the information that we want to use, and then create the form on the Drupal site that we want to submit this information to, and then go ahead and alter this program I've set up for the fields that the new form will be set up for. So we're moving right along. I would say probably in another month it should be done. The hardest part was figuring out this token deal and also figuring out how to submit the information to these different forms, the different fields in the forms. So I got that all figured out, so we're moving forward. All right, and the other thing I was going to talk about is about the new HAL taking over Xorg. In Gen 2, Xorg just went to stable, just went to 1.5.3, and I'm sure in all the other distributions, most of them are moving into 1.5. If they haven't already been there, I know Ubuntu's been there. And I'm not sure about Slackware. But anyhow, this is the wave of the future with Xorg as far as HAL taking over the input part of it. All right, the rationale behind this is historically, the X server would be used on terminals and later on desktop computers. On those machines, the X server would start once, upon when it would configure itself with regards to its rarely changing input and output peripherals, monitors, video cards, keyboards, mice, tablets, touchscreens, etc. With the advent of mobile computing, a given computer often sees its peripherals changing while it is running. Obviously, restarting the whole operating system is not an option, so the kernel hackers accommodated for this by implementing device hot plugging. Since devices are exposed to user space as device nodes in /dev, the highly configurable UDEV was born in lieu of device file system or a manually maintained /dev. Still, the X server is having issues with this as it probes devices and opens device files upon startup. If the device was absent on X startup, it will remain unknown to X. If the device file was present at X startup and the file disappears, example, the device is disconnected, the file handle is lost. Thus, the device will remain unknown. Even if replugged and the same device node is recreated, which is easy to do with UDEV. This is also true for GPM, a mouse daemon for virtual terminals. To overcome this issue, notably with the most widely encountered cases, that is, a laptop user with a touchpad and an external mouse, the kernel emulates a PS2 mouse with all events coming from any mouse connected to the system. The device file is always present and resides at device input mice or device PSAUX. This has a number of issues. First, being an emulated PS2 mouse, the protocol is predefined and has inherent limitations overcome by various proprietary extensions like IMPS/2 and Explore PS/2. That's more. Events coming from all the mice have to be translated to this protocol, and thus untranslatable events are lost to or misunderstood. What's more, it is impossible to have such an emulated device work in absolute coordinates, since it would make no sense, as events can come from many devices. Also, relative button events, like for a wheel, where there's no press release events, have to be a wheel axis in the PS/2 protocol, and you can't have much of them. Furthermore, all mice will have the same settings with regards to speed or button orders as set via XSet of XModMap. This is an issue when you have a laser mouse which just flies across the screen when another one moves like a turtle. In the end, it doesn't matter for many users out there who just want a mouse with a wheel and three buttons, yet there is an increasing market of keyboards, mice, and other special input devices with various extra buttons. While hardcore users will argue that this is useless and that everybody should use tiling window managers and forget the mouse, it is increasingly useful to perform many common tasks with either the keyboard or the mouse, depending on what you're currently doing. The solution to enable all those extra buttons is to use the X input event driver, or EVDEV. Trouble is, this driver must have access to the exact event node matching your device, which resides in /device/input/event. And not some funky workaround device emulator sync. So EVDEV will work, but only if the device is plugged in at X startup and never unplugged afterwards. Rather than writing a routine monitoring /dev or listening to kernel events, which would have the additional nasty effect of tying X hot plugging to Linux, the X devs decided to leverage the power of HAL, of the HAL daemon. HALD, H-A-L-D, essentially builds a uniform database of the current hardware available on the system, together with any information it can deduce, like device type and so on, and updates it live according to kernel events, while resensing device files. Now, thanks to the hard work of the HALD and DBus developers, all that X has to do is connect to HALD. This is done via DBus, monitor devices, disappearance, and take action if the device is relevant to X. Current X input status upstream. There's no other way to have real hot plugging. This is indeed what one might relate to XRandR for its display hot plugging ability, and it's called X input. It is in the process of a huge revamp, first with this hot plug support and next with MPX, multi-pointer X. In the near future, it is posing a number of problems because many pieces of software, XModMap, GTK are unaware of how to handle multiple devices and them disappearing and reappearing. Requirements: to use input hot plugging, the XF86 input InDev package is required. This module handles both keyboard and mouse configuration by default. Other drivers like XF86 input VM mouse and XF86 input Synaptics also contain hot plugging configuration files, which will cause these drivers to be used instead of EvDev when your hardware supports them. Besides installing a supported driver, both dbus and HAL have to be running, and the HAL Damien to the Damien's array and etc. RC config before anything related to Xorg is started. The HAL Damien will load the dbus Damien automatically. Configuration: though input devices are hot plugged, especially keyboards, need configuration. Currently, there is no way to auto-configure key maps for hot-plug keyboards. The default keyboard layout has to be configured in a HAL.fdi file. The key map defaults to a standard US keyboard and is configured in user share HAL.fdi policy FDI file, a configuration file included in the HAL package. As this file is overwritten on every HAL upgrade, this file should be copied to etc. HAL FDI policy. Files placed inside this directory will override the files in user share. The things you want to change are input.xkb.layout and input.xkb.variant. Other options are input.xkb.rules, input.xkb.model, and input.xkb.options. These options resemble the options you use to put in xorg.config. Basically, what it is that the options that we used to put in Xorg config are now going into these .fdi files. If you have just a regular keyboard, you're not going to have to worry about anything. It should just go ahead and work with the default file. If you're, let's say you have a French keyboard or you have a Spanish keyboard, you might have to do a little configuration on your own. Now, if you're using a distribution like Ubuntu, the developers of Ubuntu are really good with Xorg. So they have probably covered all the bases already as far as putting a bunch of different FDI files into your policy. So you may not have to do anything, but there might come a point when you do have to do something. So it's nice to know kind of how everything is working. I'm just basically giving an overview of this. And what I'll do is I'll basically cheat sometimes. Like if I have a laptop that I'm having a problem with the touchpad, I will actually boot up a live CD of Ubuntu and see what they're using for their .fdi files. Other files worth looking at are 10-x11-input.fdi, which configures the default keyboard and mouse driver, and 11-x11-synaptics.fdi, which configures your Synaptics touchpad in case you have a laptop and you're using the Synaptics and Synaptics is installed. Note that HAL needs a restart after changing .fdi files, or it will not auto detect any changes. X does not require any restart for this. It will keep listening for signals from HAL. Reconfiguring devices that were already added before HAL was reconfigured will keep running with the old configuration. To reconfigure these devices, X needs a restart after all, but removing and adding the devices to the system will also reconfigure them. This is not very useful for laptops with an integrated keyboard or device that don't support hot plugging, PS2 mice and keyboards though. Configuring input with HAL with the x86 input EVDEV driver. In a nutshell, HAL allows to set the exact same properties as Xorg config does, but with a lot more flexibility. You can now have per device layouts, for instance. All of this is provided by the XF86-input-InDev driver. How ships with device rules that are kept in user share how. Important, do not edit those. They will be overwritten during the next how update. You can instead add your own rules into etc. how FDI policy. Sample configuration FDI files are available. User share doc how dot FDI. Pick the one that best fits your configuration and copy it to etc. how FDI policy. For example, if you just want a basic configuration for a non-US keyboard layout, copy the content of user share doc how whatever your nationality is layout FDI BZ2 into etc. how FDI policy 10-xinput-configuration.fdi using bzcat and edit it to match the keyboard layout you wish to use. Don't forget to read the man EVDev to see the driver's capabilities and options, especially mouse wheel emulation, middle mouse button emulation, etc. Note, current HAL versions are not yet able to pick up FDI file changes on their own. You'll have to restart HAL's input script to see your changes. To make sure everything is correct, use the LSHAL utility to display HAL's device tree and search for input. The content of your HAL rules should show up in LSHAL's output. By default, HAL will tell the X server to use the EVDev driver to access all input devices. However, this can be changed to any input driver you wish. You can therefore put all your input device configuration into HAL, even if you use other input drivers such as Symantecs or Linux Wacom. Without HAL, if you don't want to use HAL, you can either build Xorg server without support for HAL, or you can turn auto device options off in the server flag section of your Xorg config. In Gen 2, basically what I did was I enabled input in dev and I in the kernel as a module, and I rebuilt the kernel and I reboot. And I set the input devices to EVDev, and I made sure I had in my use flags I had HAL. I went ahead and rebuilt the world with the new use flags, and I went ahead and emerged pdepclean to clean out any of the old stuff. Now, when you run depclean, watch out for GCC removal, because you may have a newer GCC and you're actually using the older GCC. You'll remove the old GCC and you'll have big problems. So what I did was I went ahead and upgraded GCC at the same time while I was doing all of this and rebuilt the entire system. My Xorg config file is now very bare. I removed the input sections, all the keyboard and mouse stuff. I removed all the module section. And I created a new section called server flags. And I added three options to that. I added option auto add devices on, option auto enable devices on, and option allow empty input on. Now, if you wanted to use without HAL, what you would put is you would put option auto add devices to false, and you would use the old way. But you might as well go ahead and get used to it, because it's moving, Xorg is moving to HAL. So once the sooner you get used to playing around with these .fdi files, if you need to, the better off you're going to be. Miscellaneous options. The old fun handling was shaken quite a bit, and the new version of Xorg is, what I'm using is 1.5.3. The free type module is now useless, since the server uses libxfunt to load whatever funts you might have for legacy applications. As for legacy funts themselves, they are now nearly useless, as they are provided a built-in fix font with all the legacy applications and toolkits to should be able to use. The problem with this is it's a very ugly font. So if you're using, you'll notice, like for in Python, for any kind of T-linker applications, the fonts look terrible. Any kind of old GTK applications, I mean, the fonts just look terrible. So anyhow, I just stay, if the fonts look really bad, I just stay away from them. The fonts on all everything else, it looks absolutely beautiful. So with the changes, I've been pleasantly surprised. The great thing about Linux is that you can do research on all of this stuff, and everybody's really helpful as far as to get you up and running. When I first upgraded about 3 months ago to the new Xorg, I had no keyboard and mouse, and I didn't know what in the world happened, so I had to do a little research. Thank goodness I had another laptop that I could get on the internet with to be able to search around and find out what happened, because I just blindly went in and upgraded Xorg without checking it out, what was going to happen. And that was a shocker, because all of a sudden you load X and you're sitting there looking at the screen and the mouse and the keyboard, you got nothing. So got that figured out, and moving right along. So okay, that's it for me. I'll see you in a couple weeks. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Send me an email if you have any comments or suggestions, or if you just want to BS, stop by Freenode IRC channel / Linux Crazy. Talk to y'all later. Bye.